Hydrofunk remix of Sonic the Hedgehog 3 by Will Rock. Folks, you know what that song means.
Yeah.
Yeah? It's time for Seeking Infinity. Are you okay over there? Oh my god.
This might be a bad hour.
You look horrible.
Hello. Yeah, it's time for our show, Seeking Infinity. Journey 3, Episode 5. Taking it easy. Unintentionally doing so right now. I'm just going to throw this out there right now. We can cut this out later if we have to.
Sure.
So this is the first time I haven't used soda as a mixer in a mixed drink.
So what's in there then?
Way too much vodka.
So what else is in there?
Lime juice and triple sec.
Oh my god. Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. I can see that. All right. So tonight's show might be a little abbreviated.
No. No hospital runs.
Well, not because of that. I mean, because of the topic at hand.
Oh, well. We're taking it easy. We don't have to rush.
Well, I don't know. But still, I mean, we don't want to, like, rant on and ramble on forever. Because that's not what we're doing for Journey 3, remember?
Oh, that's true. But we do have a lot of insight about taking it easy. So.
That's true. We are professional...
easy getters.
Taking it easy, guys? No, we can do better than that.
I don't know. Whatever.
We'll think of something better later. Well, welcome, everybody. I'm Mr. Bond.
And I'm Tormod.
Wonderful. 15th of November, 2013 for episode number 5. We're going to be talking about managing downtime. Downtime, of course, when you're just waiting on stuff to happen. You got a whole bunch of things out there. You're maybe waiting for people to get back to you. Or maybe you don't have a clear idea on what to do next. For us, we're kind of in the middle of that right now, which is why we felt it would be a good idea to talk about it this week. So let's start with half one, professional stuff. For me, as the developer... really, there shouldn't be a lot of downtime for me right now because we have a lot of work to do on the development side of things. We have a full engine game to write, pretty much. Also, as the very heavily business-focused guy for now, we're waiting on a lot of stuff for forming our company, getting all the paperwork in line, and specifically in the past couple weeks, the law firm we're using to help us out is kind of going through a little bit of a transition period with our current lawyer, so we're kind of waiting on some delays on that front as well. So with that kind of in the pipeline, that's a little bit of downtime on our end. So really, during this downtime, I've been tackling some smaller things. I also manage the website stuff too here. And there's always these little small style issues that I need to take care of. There's always something that doesn't quite look right. So those are usually 10, 15 minute fixes or half an hour fixes or something that I just push off and say, yeah, I'll get to that later. And now is a perfect time to do that stuff because, well, it's later and I have some time to do it. I've always got a running list of like half dozen to a dozen little small things that need to be taken care of. So I start in on that stuff, start reducing that list down a little bit. Besides that, we have a lot of different places where we store our information, and it's usually in a pretty good state of disarray most of the times. So going through and organizing those places is a pretty good thing to do when you have a few minutes to burn, so to speak. Other than that, if you find your task list running low, I mean, if you're not doing anything because you don't have anything on your list to do, it's a good idea to start storming up some things to do. I mean, there's probably a lot of stuff you're overlooking that you'll come up with if you just give it a couple minutes of thought. So definitely take some time to do that, and especially for us, Trello is really handy for just quickly jotting stuff down for task lists.
And alternatively, taking a quick glance and seeing what you have to do. That way, you can be like, do I actually have downtime right now? Oh shit, I was supposed to do this 3 days ago.
Yeah. And then if you actually do have downtime, like a significant chunk, go back over some of your like non-current project-related stuff, like some of your really half-baked ideas that you have stored up somewhere. Because I have about... well, I'm just looking at one folder. I've got a dozen different files of just random shit I thought of over the past years that could probably become great ideas, but it needs a lot of work first.
My problem is most of those ideas are shower ideas, promptly forgotten about. They'll come back to me someday and or in a dream, but...
so then you write them down during downtime.
Yeah, if you can remember them.
Yeah, that's true. But you have time to remember them, so, you know, well, try to remember them at any rate.
Well, that's the case, yeah. A lot of the stuff that I come up with, you know, music-wise, are things that I'll just get ideas for in the shower, usually. That's honestly how the last three things that I wrote came up, where I started finally getting to break ground on something other than, oh, I have a melody. Well, I need an intro. And I finally come up with all of the right pieces of things. And then things start to write themselves. But you need to have that process. And I think part of the reason why Shower Time is so excellent, I'm going to like almost trademark this, because you're giving yourself time to relax and you don't really have a whole hell of a lot to do in the shower. I mean, you're just kind of cleaning yourself and whatnot, but you have a lot of time where you're not actively doing something. So you let your mind drift for a while, and that's when some of the really cool stuff comes out. If you can give yourself that level of fluidity outside of, you know, forced downtime like that, so you can actually collect your thoughts outside of those tasks, then you get some cool stuff outside of those times, and you can actually have a chance to write them down instead of being like, crap, I'm sopping wet, and if I try to type things out on my phone, it's going to explode, and
paper is a no-go because of the whole wet thing.
Exactly. Fortunately, those song ideas I had, I was able to at least internalize one of the lines from them, and then everything else is like, oh, okay. It's one of those, you have the entire thought and it's kind of far away and you need to figure out the path to get from your crappy memory back to that thought again. And usually for me, it's just like, oh, I remember a bit of the melody and now it just came back.
Or sometimes it's an entirely external factor, like a show you were watching at the time.
Or something.
I found that sometimes triggers it too.
Yeah.
It's like I'm watching something really stupid on TV that I never, ever, ever watch. And I'll see like an ad for it and be like, yeah. Oh, yeah, that other thing I was thinking about while I totally wasn't paying attention to that show.
And then you turn the show off and do something useful.
Yeah, generally.
Yeah,
that's usually how it goes. Then you go write the shit down so you don't forget it again.
You gotta keep it all in one place. Or at least organized in some manner where you realize that you need to go look at it in the future. Not necessarily in one place, because sometimes some ideas are just not ready for prime time.
Yeah, keep those things out of your production folder.
Yeah, pretty much.
For a little bit.
Exploding goats. Be kind of cool.
I don't think I did Exploding Goats yet.
Not yet.
No. That might be like version 2.
That could be. Sometimes the grass on the mountain is bad. It causes your goats to have stomach aches.
But if you're looking for something kind of entirely off of your project, I mean, I tend to keep up with just industry news, just industry related stuff. Sometimes I don't have time to actually catch up on things, but when there's downtime, I definitely hit up like Ars Technica or Engadget or something like that. Or any of the 10 dozen game announcement sites. Stuff that I missed, like titles that were huge that I somehow missed because I don't really pay attention to mainstream games very much. Or stuff that really took a dive for some reason or another. Some AAA title that wasn't really all it's cracked up to be. Go figure.
Yay.
Yeah. Try to think of which one I'm thinking of.
How about like FIFA 10 through 13, where it's the same engine, same game, literally.
Yeah, paying $60 for roster updates, isn't that great?
That yeah. And somehow it's the highest grossing game.
Yeah.
I'm just like,
explain that one to me.
Fuck?
I don't know. People
DLC, that's the appropriate time to use it.
Yeah, so keeping up with industry news, look for sales. Well, you don't really need to look for sales anymore. You just go on Steam on any given day and they've got tons of shit just laying there.
Or on Twitter, I've been following a particular account called Geek Cheaply, and there are other things that are out there that are very similar. That's how I found Pokemon Y for $18.03 at Walmart last week. That was a steal at less than half the price. So you'll just find these things. Go subscribe to things like this, because, I mean, even if you're not going to be looking for deals all the time, you'll at the very least get an idea of, oh, this is when sales tend to be and things like that. Obviously, we're getting more toward the holiday season, but
right.
There are other websites, too, that often include computer things or video games. Slickdeals.net is one of my very favorite ones that I've deliberately stopped looking at every day because I'm very tempted to spend money. That stuff is fun because you can often find titles that you had been kind of like churning about in the back of your head, like, oh, I'm just waiting for this to go on sale and Steam hasn't put it on sale. Oh, look, a physical copy is like 75% off, or like a couple days ago, or yesterday actually it was Amazon, where they had PS4 games, buy two, get one free. It was a 3-hour thing.
Jeez.
Target's got buy two, get one free games this entire week with free shipping. Things like that. I mean, at least be mildly aware of what's going on. So following those kinds of Twitter accounts, looking at those kinds of websites, etc., are really helpful. I mean, for those of us who don't really have that big of an income that we can spend on games exclusively, finding them on sale is like a treasure chest, pretty much. Stuff like that is going to enable you to get more things to do more relaxing. Now, obviously, that's a double-edged sword when you're a game developer, when you have all these other games that are really influencing you. You have to come up with something that's unique to you.
Right, but you also need to do research on stuff, too.
Well, that's true. So you have to really, you have to limit yourself in some respects as to how much other things will actually impact what you make. But, I mean, obviously you can take some ideas and improve upon them. That's kind of the whole thing. So
I do like using that excuse to justify playing more games, though.
Oh, I totally get it.
Research, no, yeah.
I mean,
and it is, honestly, you know, some research, because, like, oh, now that we're looking at it more from a development and producing standpoint, it's like, I don't see games the same way I used to a few years ago. It's more like, oh, okay, well, this system is really neat. Damn it, I should be having fun.
Well, no, it's I still manage to have fun, but I often find myself critiquing things. I mean, I'll even throw this out to Miteki. Hey, guys, we've been playing Book 1 and Book 2 of Dragon Fantasy. Now, I think it's a fantastic game so far, and it's been a wonderful time waster, and I'm saying that in the nicest way possible. But, I mean, there are certain things that I disagree with, and I think I'm entitled to that as a player of your games. But at the same time, I'm enjoying it. But, I mean, now that we're in this mindset, especially post-PAX, where this year was just so heavy on development stuff because we were at PAX Dev for the first time.
Right.
And just starting to think about things in those ways, I'm going through and playing games, and I'm noting really good interface styles or good transitions between cutscene and story or a good balance and things like that. I'm starting to think about production value and pacing a lot more than I used to. And obviously interfaces is still going to be a huge thing for me, being UI UX oriented. It's still possible to enjoy games, even with all of that stuff in mind. It's just you have to make sure that you allow yourself to do that instead of hyper focus on this is research. This is something I need to pound through in this amount of time. I don't want to spend too much time on these games and I want to get on to other things. I mean, I find myself falling into that a lot recently because we've had Dragon Fantasy Books 1 and Book 2 since PAX, really, because we offered to do reviews and Anna Marie was very kind and gave us some codes for it so we could do reviews, and that will be upcoming here. But I find myself like, okay, we've been waiting to finish Lufia and we finally got into Book 1, finishing that, and we're in Book 2. Oh crap, we gotta get back to Lufia 2 so then we can start back on the Final Fantasy run. And it's just like we have this huge like queue of games that are coming up. Now, it's good to have, I guess, motivation and wanting to do all of this stuff, but at the same time, they're games. They're meant to be enjoyed. So for me, I'm actually reining myself back because I wanted to finish Dragon Fantasy Book 2 in 3 or 4 days at most. That's just not realistic, but I wanted to get through these games like, go, go, go. Okay, we get the story. Fine, move, go.
Well, I can tell you the story.
Well, I understand. I mean, they're RPGs. They're in the 16-bit style. I mean, I enjoy the what they've done with the trope, pretty much. The gigantic 16-bit trope. I'm just going to label it as such. It's a meta trope. There are so many games that I want to play and especially experience with you because I like RPGs. You kind of like them. You're more into...
They're all right. I mean...
You like your platformers. You like your challenge games.
It's hit and miss sometimes,
no,
honestly.
I totally understand that. I want to get through FF6 and, like, we know how to play Final Fantasy games. We've gone through so many of them together already and we know the formula. We know how it works.
There's plenty of exploits.
Well, exactly, but I mean, like...
Even without playing a specific one, you kind of know how to get through it pretty quickly.
Exactly, or you can have fun with game glitches where, like, who was it? Sid, in FF3 for the NES, we played a fanlation of it where you could keep talking to him and you would bounce outside of the room and it'd be like, tee-hee-hee. You could do stupid stuff like that. I mean, that kind of stuff always made me really happy because I liked finding glitches in games and exploiting them to my heart's content. Now we're moving into the Super Nintendo era where it's not as common. There's a little more polish because they have more money and more time to produce and things like that. Obviously, you keep finding as you go forward. Right now, it's Dragon Fantasy Book 2, and then it's Lufia 2, and then finally we get to start on FF6, which for me is like, that is an end goal for me. No offense to those other two games, but I mean, like, my favorite game ever is FF6. I want to get that going, and I'm going to have fun with that because I know some of the exploity things in the game that are going to make it cool. Or I know, not necessarily exploits in glitches, but exploits in how to game the game. I'm looking forward to that stuff. There's so many metagames out there. I love it.
Design-enabled glitches, pretty much.
Pretty much. I mean, I'm starting to understand that there is more to a game than its core story. Some games will allow you to do things that can potentially break the main quest line by enabling you to do whatever you want. I like having the option to do that. Like, Kit and I are playing FF8 right now, and we spent 12 hours getting materia. Or not materia, what the hell is it? Just junctioning magic and drawing magic from enemies and stuff like that. And then turning it into high-level magic and then junctioning that to our stats. One hit kill. Oh, there's actually a boss, and the bosses scale with you. Shit. So, I mean, like, they countered the exploit by letting some enemies scale with you. It's actually kind of a cool system. I'm totally going off on a tangent again. So the higher level you are, the higher level the enemies will be, and their skills will also increase too, and their movesets will change, and they'll suddenly be a little more intelligent with their AI and things like that. That's actually really cool. So we're going to get to that game eventually. We have to get through 6 and 7 first, but while I'm saying exploit, as in I'm junctioning all this magic right away, the game is also making it more difficult in other areas, so you still have to strategize. Honestly, playing games for enjoyment is still huge, but when you're starting to think in the game developer mindset, you're never going to get out of the, oh, that interface blows, etc. Like, initially, I thought the Lufia 1 interface was just god-awful, but after a while, I got really used to it.
Yeah, there's definitely something to be said about playing games just for development purposes. We'll talk more about the fun aspect in the second half. Kind of on that sort of same bent, for development purposes, keeping yourself sharp or even getting yourself sharp in a field that you're not really familiar with. I haven't done this recently myself. The last time I did it was probably 6 or 7 years ago when I picked up some 3D modeling stuff. I was god awful at it, and I still am, but it was a lot of fun just seeing a box on the screen that I made. I mean, the stuff that I made was just god awful for like 2 or 3 months. This long ago, it was like I was still in high school. I had tons of time. I didn't have a regular 9-to-5 job.
Oh,
I didn't
man.
Have to really worry about homework or any of that shit because it was high school. My
it
God,
was
who
so
cares?
Easy. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's like I had probably 4 or 5 hours a day to sit down and do this stuff.
And we thought that our lives sucked.
Yes, that is true. It was like, ah, damn it, this sucks. Can't wait to grow up and be an adult or something.
And now we work 45 hours a week. Granted, we do things that we enjoy,
yeah,
thankfully.
That's true. So to go back to my kind of modeling thing, I spent like 5 or 6 hours a day just doing this because it was a little bit interesting and I got a little bit better every day, and eventually it led into my modding stuff. So it's like, oh, cool, I can do the whole workflow from nothing here to the full 3D animated model here and actually put it into the game because I know how to do that stuff now.
But it's interesting, though, when you, again, this is speaking from both a professional and a fun kind of aspect here. When you have modding communities that are out there that greatly improve upon a game. I mean, Skyrim, for instance, looks pretty good by itself, but I mean, there are so many add-ons and mods and texture replacement packs, and hell, you can even do the same thing with Minecraft if you want, but
yep.
Just so many things that will enhance or alter or completely obfuscate the player experience as to what it was originally. The modding community is something that any developer should really cherish because it's going to keep your game alive and it's also going to keep churning interest. So as they're coming up with more ways to use your game's scripting interface or whatever the case is, even hacking your existing resources, people will want to buy your game and play your game and do other things with your game or turn your product into something it was never meant to do. I grew up loving that shit, and that's what actually got me into games, is because games could be exploited, and exploits are fun, and watching games crash horribly and have all these random weird effects, FF6, was so rewarding for me. It's like I loved the game Genie because I could tweak things that I should never be able to touch. I could break code. I could do all sorts of weird shit. I could access beta levels, Ocarina of Time, for instance. Like, there are 7 beta quests that are out there that you can unlock and things like that. It's just like, whoa, all of these things that are left in the ROM images that you thought they were like madly trying to cram everything in at the last second. Dude, you have an entire second game in here that is just waiting to be played. For a lot of us, we had these games. So, I mean, there's that line of like what's professional and what's fun. And it's like you did these things when you were younger, or even now, just because you think it's cool. But at the same time, you're getting so much out of it saying, oh, I need to have more stringent bug checks or at the very least collision checking and things like that in this scenario or whatever the case is. Like that aspect of exploration inside of what was, you know, marketed as a huge new 3D world, all these 3D worlds, really. If you didn't have that aspect of exploration, what was the point? It was just bigger. It had another dimension. Woo. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it's just a level but it makes it look infinite because you have a texture in the background that makes it look like it goes forever.
Yeah, because you have a nice skybox.
There's that professional and fun blending. Whatever. It just happens. It's a glitch. Yeah. I like to break things.
Yeah, we're going to minimize that for our stuff.
Possibly.
No, absolutely.
I know.
Not possibly.
So
that's why you're QA, though.
Exactly. No, I mean, like, we're certainly going to have planned events that are supposed to be the way they are. Not necessarily part of the game, but if you find them and manage to do them, then all the power. Do something weird that isn't meant to happen.
Right.
But
we're not going to have a straight line, follow this or...
Hell no.
Yeah. No. Not going to do that. That's not very fun.
Woohoo. I rambled.
Yeah, that's fine. Well, we're getting you into more of the personal downtime stuff anyway, so why don't we take a brief intermission, and we'll be right back in a few minutes after the song. Tonight, a remix of Street Fighter II entitled Merkin Supreme by Brandon Strader. All right, intermission over. Let's move on to the second half of tonight, which we already kind of bled into at the end of the first half. But
it's hard not to, really.
That's how stuff goes, whatever. That of personal downtime, stuff entirely outside of projects you're working on that you just need to do to unwind, relax, to have some fun.
Can I cut in?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Twitch. Twitch is something that I've actually been looking at seriously for the last X amount of months, I guess.
Yeah, it's a dangerous thing sometimes.
It is, because it's just like, I finally realized I have the PS3 app, which means it's so much easier to watch it on the actual television. Because before I would watch speedruns and whatnot just on people's private channels on YouTube, because they would really post those things because that's the avenue for them.
Right.
For anything that's not live stream. And speedruns are really, really, really fun. Because there are so many exploits out there, like, you can have a speedrun of so many different varieties of a game, like Ocarina of Time, which is one of my favorite things to watch. Because they're either computer-assisted TAC runs, which tool-assisted. Yeah, that's what it is. Okay, tool-assisted runs. Or they're actually live runs, or things like Extra Lives and things like that. Those are really, really freaking cool. But at any given time, you can turn on Twitch and be like, I want to see this game. And you can see every streamer out there doing that game at that time and choose between them or flip between them back and forth and whatever the case is. And it's like, I want to watch Spelunky. No, I want to watch League of Legends. Huh? Or I want to watch Final Fantasy VIII or whatever the case may be. There are people who play old ass games on there just for the hell. And as long as they label it appropriately, you can catch those streams right away. It's just kind of like, thumbs up to that. I love watching people play games. Like, Mr. Bond's downfall is like, hey, you should play this thing. And it becomes visual entertainment for me. It's like watching a movie, except it's interactive and you don't always win. No offense.
I very infrequently win.
Well, that's the thing. It's just kind of like when you go through and play something like Double Dragon 2, 3, etc., the harder ones as you keep going on. You guys took a lot of time to get that practiced up and stuff, but I mean, it's really freaking impressive to see all that.
Double Dragon 2 is kind of 50-50. Double Dragon 3 is probably about 10% victory.
Yeah, but when you do it, it's really freaking awesome.
An amazing percentage considering that game, actually.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you can play... This is one of the things that I actually, like, gloat about. Like, I'm roommates with Mr. Bond. He can play Battletoads drunk.
That I can.
So it's just kind of like, I mean, you have some notoriety going for you because of that stuff, and it's like, I can't do that shit. But, I mean, just being able to watch streamers play games, like, any game, is just really awesome, because sometimes I just don't want to play something. I want to see how other people play it so I can learn how to better play the games myself, or just be entertained. Like, for myself, I love watching people play games because I think it's like my favorite form of entertainment. I'm hanging out with somebody doing something they clearly love to do because they're impassioned, they're doing well, they're doing things that they enjoy. And I'm just kind of there for the ride, and I'm watching them progress, and I'm kind of cheering them on or giving them suggestions or being the map guy or whatever the case is. I mean, I like doing that because I grew up with that stuff. And my dad used to plow through the Zelda game for the original NES, and we would play the game together, and we would see how few deaths we can get and things like that, and how long will it take us to get all the way to level 8 in the end, and then do we want to start as Link, or do we want to do second quest in the same day, or whatever the case is. I mean, it's fun to see that stuff, because it's always a challenge. I mean, no matter how many times you play a game, Dark Nuts are going to be Dark Nuts. They're stupid. They're fucky. I hate them. They're just awful. Then I learned the word clobber, and it was kind of fun. And it was like, you know, you just pick up these things playing games, and it brings back wonderful nostalgic feelings. And I love watching games. It's just Twitch is a fantastic method of doing that. Highest props to them for making an awesome service. Like, it's built into damn near everything now, and that's going to be really fantastic.
Yeah, that's one of the more interesting points I've found now for more recent games. Like, having Twitch integration is one of the selling points now.
Because you don't need to have Fraps and things like that, which is a really fantastic technology, don't get me wrong. Fraps made all of this stuff possible, and that's probably, if it's not done at the same time as Twitch, perhaps even before, it might have been actually the inspiration for something like
Twitch. I mean, there's entire hardware devices dedicated to this sort of thing. Video capture is really a big push for this sort of thing, too.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Like, I had considered grabbing one of those devices just because. Because at some point, I think we're going to do something like
that,
where we just you know, play games and stream it out there for people, whether we suck at it or not, or whether we're, you know, good comedians or whatever. Who gives a shit? At that point, we're not going to... Well, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Biggest air quotes ever, but...
I mean, we're not the people who listen to our podcast would probably also care to listen to our other games, because then we're not as filtered at all. Plus,
oh, no.
We're probably going to be drunk. So...
Probably.
It depends on the game. There are some games that you really do need a level of sobriety to play properly. So...
Such as...
For me, I absolutely have to have an entirely clean and clear mind to play Super Mario Kart. Otherwise, I'm just fucked. That game, with its emulated 3D and Mode 7 plus very interesting handling mechanics, I need to actually pay attention and focus to play that game well.
I guess.
I mean, games like that, where it actually involves a high level of skill. It's not just, oh, I'm just going to remember this pattern and woo, I'm done. Now we have the Ouya, too, which we have to get more into, because it actually has some pretty cool games that I want to get trying again, and we have two controllers, so we can do whatever we want with that, too.
And you can sync Xbox and PlayStation controllers to it as well. So,
oh.
Four controllers. Easily.
I neglected to read about that, apparently. But clearly, I mean, like, we're on the fun side of the show as to, like, the personal things that we do to unwind. This is one episode that I can ramble with license. So, I mean,
within
like...
Within reason.
Well, of course, but I mean, like, they've been fairly relevant, obviously, with game design and game playing and things like that. Our anecdotes pretty much explain why we are where we are.
Yeah, well, this is totally relevant to us right now, because we are in a pretty steep downtime right now.
Oh, yeah, truly.
I mean, we've got a lot of business stuff still going on behind the scenes, but a lot of it we can't really deal with right now, because it's out of our hands at this point. Which is fine. I mean, that it works out pretty well for us right now, because dealing with business stuff, you know, that's important, but...
It's also really stressful.
Fuck if I don't like doing it.
Exactly. And I mean, like, you being the majority here, you unfortunately have most of the role of doing that. I mean, like, I'm along for the ride and for the support and everything like that, however.
A lot of it is my responsibility, and I know you're there for it, too. So
yes,
it's like,
yes.
Crap, well, we gotta do it. So we might as well do this... Might as well do a lot of it up front, and if we have some time to spend on it, so what? We'll get to it. I mean, our goal right now is for the beginning of next year, even though we started this process probably, you can see, 2 months ago, I think, now.
At least.
Was our first meeting with lawyers to get this going.
Well, at least, yeah, okay. But I mean, we've been conceptualizing for a while.
Yeah,
and trying
I mean,
to at least
even
gather
before PAX, we were thinking about it.
Yeah.
Getting things kind of prepped up for it.
And then we met lawyer friend. Hi, lawyer friend, if you're listening. I hope you are.
Oh, yeah. That too. But I guess to circle back around to your first point of this half, Twitch TV and all that streaming stuff, the most recent thing I watched for that was an hour and 10 minute run of Spelunky.
Which I have entire intentions of actually watching, because it sounds really amazing.
It was pretty good. So anyways, not to spoil too much about it, it was an hour and 10 minute... eggplant hell run by a single person, which is amazing in and of itself.
And definitely, obviously not a speed run.
Yes. Oh, well, yeah. Clearly, obviously not a speed run. The last speed run I watched for it was a 6.5 minute hell run all the way through.
Which I've never actually seen that one yet. I've seen the 8 minute one.
Which itself was just
ridiculous.
What? Like, I would have probably shit my pants.
You know, honestly,
at any time
once we're done
one.
With the show tonight, I kind of need to see both of these. Let's just do that the rest of the night.
That's fine. Yeah, you do need to see both.
No,
of them, actually.
I mean, like, I'm awful at the game, but
amazing.
it's astounding seeing how people break these games. It's not even breaking. It's
this,
just
both of these were
skill.
Not. Both of these were not breaking the game in any way, which is kind of funny.
I love that.
It's
stuff.
Just the system support all that stuff like entirely. It's great.
This is what empowers us.
Exactly, and this kind of leads into my second real point for this half, was to get some tips about games you have played the hell out of. I've played a decent amount of Spelunky, but I am nowhere near as good as those other people who are doing speed runs and eggplant
exactly.
runs and all that shit. It's just like, I can still pick up tips and tricks from them. And actually, point of fact, after I had watched that 6.5 minute speed run, I went back, played it again, and beat my high score by, like, double.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, what kinds of things did you pick up?
So I picked up ghost mining. I mean, I was always freaked the hell out by ghost mining.
I kind of want to see you do it so I can understand the concept better.
But it's like, this was another one of those Battletoads type moments.
Yeah.
Where as soon as you get over the fact that it's instant death, you're fine.
Yeah.
You're like always so worried. It's like, oh my God,
I'm going to die. Yep.
Oh shit. And it's like, oh, well, I'm going to die, but, you know, I can avoid it pretty easily by just, you know, slowing down and taking my time. And yeah, then it's like, oh, no problem.
Yeah, I mean, in all honesty, if you don't have dumb fucks like me blowing on the ghost and hurrying it up, I mean, you have plenty of time to run around. Okay, I'm still learning how all those mechanics work just because I'm not entirely familiar with the game.
It's a lot deeper than it appears at first blush or second or third or tenth.
But that game in itself, I mean, this is a testament to the game. It's a very simple game. It's a roguelike platformer. And yet all of these people are clamoring to beat each other because of time, because of all the random shit you can bring over into other levels
and
things like that.
Time and score and now the daily challenges for the PC
version, I mean, that just breaks open the whole egg right there. So, I mean, it's a fantastically designed game, curse you all.
I'm going to contradict myself a little bit in saying that reach out and play games that you don't really like, which is not something I do very often. Like, even recently, I haven't done that very often.
I especially need to do it because I have the genres that I'm comfortable with.
Right,
I play things like Halo, and I'm just kind of like,
Yeah, so I just find I don't have the patience for long-running, very story-heavy games at all. It's just like,
Yeah, I understand that. And it's like, you trying to get me to play Super Smash Bros. Is just kind of like,
Well, there's other facets to that, too, though. I mean, we had talked
constantly
a little bit about
having
skill
my
levels.
Ass beat.
Yeah. Hey,
there are sometimes I pull things off rather unexpectedly that we are, but yeah, you know.
Right, yeah. Well, that's always an issue with those types of games though.
Yeah, it's very skill oriented and you need to know the proper key sequences in order to execute things.
And it can be very depressing if you get your ass handed to you all the time. And it's like, oh, why the hell am I playing this? And
exactly.
It's a very easy thing to fall into.
It took me a while to get into a game like Spiral Knights because it's an RPG, but it's an active battle RPG. Like, you have your stats and everything like that, so that obviously influences your power and things like that. But you need to know how best to utilize the things that you have and when to click and how to avoid things and stuff like that. And you just pick that stuff up as you go. And I'm really glad that I had somebody like Tyler/Rioan to help me out because he already knew several months of playing that game what to do. And it's like, okay, so you're going to basically go with me through the levels and until I can at least get some decent equipment and I can start doing real things. And I was learning along the way and he wasn't pushing me and that was really great. I am not familiar with MMOs. I don't play those kinds of games. I don't play shooters. I don't play really anything. But I mean, had people not supported me in my effort, because I know I'm going to suck. There's just no question. I can't aim. I can't do anything that's like moderately strategic in those kinds of genres. But people were patient with me, so at the very least I can have the experience once. So, I mean, like, I went through Halo 3 with you. I went through Spiral Knights at least for two nights with Rioan. I haven't been back into it, but it is a free-to-play MMO, which is freely available on Steam. But things like that, I mean, for me, it's I'm trying to convince myself to get into things that I wouldn't normally get into, because obviously my sweet spot is going to be RPGs and perhaps adventure games if I can wean myself off of the fact that boss battles are scary. It's a psychological thing. And like, I don't like challenges. And I think RPGs kind of coddle me in such a way that I can overlevel to the point where it's like these boss challenges are just woo. I can just keep spamming fight and maybe cure occasionally with my white mage, you know, your stereotype. So I'm trying to get away from that because games are so much more fun when they're challenging. But also when you have good competitive and academic people playing with you, because it's a much more rewarding experience than getting your ass beat repeatedly and actually learning why your ass is getting beat repeatedly and how you can avoid it.
Yeah, that happens. And I'm probably not the best guy to support you in that sort of thing.
Oh, whatever.
No, seriously, just because when that sort of thing happens to me, when we run into a challenge or a skill-based thing, it's, to me, I hate losing to such an astounding degree that I will play the hell out of that game until I get good enough to do the ass beating to an astounding degree. And for somebody like you, Tormod, who actually needs that sort of handholding, it's tough to do that sort of thing on a cooperative level just because you should really have people very close to the same skill level. And for me, when I play those games and get that skill kind of built up, then it's very difficult for me to kind of slow down enough to that point to help out a noob, no offense. But to actually have, you know, more than one person at that point, it's part of the reason why I like single-player games so much, is that you're not forced to speed up to a certain person right away. You're not forced to slow down for a certain person right away. You're not really restricted or hurried or anything like that. You can kind of take it at your own pace. But probably the next game along that sort of lines that probably both of us together should play is Towerfall.
I mean, yeah.
You saw that at PAX.
I played that. Which was entertaining.
It was a fucking awesome game.
Yep, less than a second, I know.
Yeah, I know. I'm not going to go into the story again just because that's very much a skill-based Twitch kind of game. But it's a game that I've only played once, and it'd probably be a good one for us to level up together on.
Yeah, I could do that.
Waiting for it to come on PC early 2014, though, probably.
What is it on now?
It's on Ouya right now.
Well,
it's the Ouya seller, pretty much.
It can give us something to do on the Ouya.
We have two controllers. That's true.
So.
That's true. Yeah, it's $15, so we'll pick it up at some point, I'm sure.
We also have the practically DS remake of FF3. We can replay if we really want to.
I know which one that is, but I'm trying to think about the remake for it. I don't think I ever played that one.
The remake is actually really, really good. It deviates from the original in some ways, but it's actually really well done. I like the FF4 remake a little better, but this one's pretty good. And I mean, I own it, so something to do on Saturday with people, maybe. At least just to preview it. It's not exactly a party game,
no.
But...
Well...
I mean, you have a party in the game, but...
Lol. Oh. Yeah, okay. I see what you did there.
Yeah, I had to.
I guess the point that I'd like to come back to for this half is just play some games, period. I mean, even if you leave the whole dev and professional aspect out of it entirely, I'm certainly guilty of that for, like, the past week or so. For playing Cobalt and now Rogue Legacy is a big one I've been playing the past couple days. A lot of fun.
Yeah, looks like something I'd want to get into.
It is pretty cool.
It looks like a roguelike platformer that's level design based. Okay, yeah, I would totally love something like that.
It's amazing. It might still be on sale on Steam for $7.50, 50% off, so grab it if you want. But play some games, especially for someone like me who likes the challenge and score-based games. Beat that high score you've had for like 3 months or 6 months or whatever.
Or years.
Or years, because past you is a dick.
Part of what really inspires us as gamers, I'm just going to say gamers, because whether you develop or play or are an enthusiast or whatever the case is, it's a form of art. Because it's interactive, it's usually story-driven, and it impacts people emotionally.
And even a lot of it is left up to interpretation.
Well, of course. And even if it's something as simple as just to beat me up, you get pissed off from it. Or if it's a story-based game like Final Fantasy X or something like that, you do have emotional things that will grip at you. I mean, as emotionless as you might say that you are, there are certain plots... And if you can maintain involvement in a game, you will get gripped into it. Stories will grab you. And with the fact that they're interactive and malleable and can change, obviously, with it being malleable, but no gameplay is ever like another, because no matter how simplistic the game is, it will never be able to repeat the same way. Because enemy placement will differ, you'll have different random battles, you'll have different random experiences, really. I mean, sure, you can have a task, but I mean, those only go so far. I mean, you're going to have some sort of random event that's going to differ somewhere. I mean, maybe not in NES, but later on when you don't have planned enemy movements and things like that. But games are highly interactive, they are an engaging form of art, and they will persist. Now... Even as these next-gen consoles are starting to edge into the entertainment realm more than the pure gameplay realm, I guess you could say, they have their purpose. and they're trying to survive on their own too. You have these machines that are trying to provide as best of a holistic entertainment experience as possible. Now, the same machine, we can look at a computer. The computer's been around for such a long time now. It's capable of doing so many different things. It fulfills so many different roles. It's just immensely upgradable and powerful. And when people write software and continue to improve on things and take each other's ideas and make them better, it just improves the ecosystem. And the same thing is happening with consoles now, too. I mean, not just indie games, because all three of the major publishers right now are supporting them quite heavily. Even your AAAs are starting to embrace the same kind of, at the very least, concepts of things. Everything is becoming so much more integrated. Whether you see that as a bad thing, as TV and that kind of entertainment needs to be separate from games, fine. But you can still have that experience, but you're going to have these integrated things. And it's really exciting from a technology standpoint to see what these things are capable of. Look at a Nintendo. I mean, a lot of us, at the very least, Mr. Bond and I, grew up in that era. We dealt with 320 by 240 video over an RF jack. I mean, we didn't have RCA back then on our TVs because our parents didn't have the money to replace our TVs for the newest things ever. We had set-top boxes that were as deep as they were wide. They had phonograph players on them and headphone out and things like that. RF was a thing. It allowed us to use channel 3 or 4. And we played these games, and the games were fantastic. The games brought us around the television for something other than mindless sitcom watching. And as time goes on, the games diverge away from that, and now they're converging again. That's not necessarily a bad thing. That's just more entertainment for us. So take what you will. And there's just so many different aspects to think of when you think of professional things and fun things and the whole gamut in between. I mean, it really is just a giant gradient. There is no clear definition between the two. As players of games, you're thinking in a developer's mindset already by basically thinking, what's good? What's bad? What would I like different? What am I going to buy again when it comes out next year, if it's the case of an annual release? What will make me buy it again? You're already thinking critically of these things. For the next Final Fantasy release, it's not necessarily an annual thing, but what kinds of things would you like? What kinds of story would you like to involve yourself in? What kind of gameplay experience do you want? Do you want to be single-player turn-driven? Do you want it to be single-player open world? Do you want MMO? I mean, there's just so many different things that you have right now. And these next-gen consoles and even PC, now that they're actually having the same game releases across multiple different platforms now and actually having interplayability, that is something that's super new.
Finally.
I mean, like FF14, you have interplayability between PS3 and PC. Finally. I mean, you have the same experience, at the very least, at the gameplay. Now, not necessarily graphics and modding and whatnot, but I mean, the consoles will probably get there too. They have to compete. They're basically going to turn into PC systems themselves anyway. They're going to converge in that sense. They need to be as modifiable as PC games in order to retain, I guess...
relevancy?
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. Things will converge. Steambox is going to be a huge thing. I mean, just things like that. And it's really awesome to see all of this stuff happening because manufacturers aren't being so staunchly against that happening now. As an enthusiast, as a professional, as a whatever you want to call me right now, because, I mean, technically I'm not a businessman in the industry yet. We don't have a company yet.
Give it a couple months.
I know. But, I mean, no matter what role you have, it's just super entertaining watching all of these things happen. And even if they don't go in the direction that you expect or want, they'll continue to change with or against you. And things will continue to change sides. I mean, that's just the way that technology evolves. That's the way that everything evolves. As a consumer, you should be really fucking excited for all this stuff because it's going to be amazing. And even if it doesn't go in the exact direction that you want it to, it'll get there, or at the very least, it'll improve in ways that you had no idea were possible. That's just the way this shit works. There are tons of games out there. If you're not comfortable with them, fine. If you can find somebody that can at least involve you or introduce you to those genres so that you might have a chance of liking it in some way, fine too. There's an experience out there for anybody of any kind of ability. Just go out and find it.
Sometimes people get very bogged down in whatever camp they happen to think they fall into. I mean, console versus PC is probably the biggest shitstorm ever.
I'm just so used to hearing PC Master Race.
I know, but it's just kind of funny because it's like, yeah, I'm part of that.
It's just kind of like, I mean, yeah, I understand exactly what they're saying, but at the very same time, you can still have a very enriching and awesome experience on a console. I mean, I still think that you cannot beat the experience of having an actual controller in your hands and having the experience of sitting with multiple people in front of a display with whatever kind of sound, whatever the hell it is. You can have 3D, what fuck, I don't care. You can have that experience in front of the console, or you can have it be multiple people in front of a PC. You can have it multiplayer. You can have multiplayer console. I mean, it's just kind of like, who the fuck gives a shit? I mean, you can have a good experience no matter what you do. Just stop dealing with semantics and just deal with the game. The game is what's cool here.
It's funny you bring up controller, like physical controller in your hand, because Steam with their big picture and Steam OS and now all of that. I mean, that's, I forget what the stat was, but it's like 30% of the Steam games have like their standard gamepad support built into it now.
Oh yeah, direct input.
Yeah, that's just going to fucking keep going up.
Yeah.
Especially now with their Steam box. I mean, people are going to have this shit hooked to their TVs in their living room. They're not going to want a keyboard and mouse. And
no.
You'll have people bitching back and forth like, oh, I have a keyboard and mouse on my couch and it's not a problem. And I happen to agree, because if the game works for that the best way, why not have a wireless keyboard and mouse on the couch?
But that's the thing, though. I mean, like, one, game developers, hear me here. Whatever kind of interface people want to use, support it. In the very least, in some rudimentary way. Because not everybody can use a controller. Not everybody can use a keyboard or mouse.
Right.
Not everybody can use a standard mouse by itself. Maybe we'll have to support a joystick or something like that. But, I mean, at the very least, simplify your interface standards so that something can control whatever your interface is in some very rudimentary way. It's not that hard.
Right. And probably the most basic part of that is key mapping.
Yeah. Or whatever the case is. I mean, just build it into your goddamn engine. It's not hard. It's literally taking input events and translating them if need be.
Yeah.
That is it. You can look at the device identifier for whatever you want and translate it into whatever else you want. It's not hard. I mean, like, I'm not a programmer, but there are so many APIs out there to do this stuff that it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and that's a double-edged sword, too, because there's a lot of APIs out there, so it's like, well, which one do I choose to support today?
That, and you don't want to give certain people an unfair advantage in, like, say, something like Jamestown, or if you had keyboard control, you can possibly have a better manipulation over everything. But
so, yeah, I would disagree with that one.
Or whatever the case
is. Yeah, yeah,
I
know
your
point.
I'm just pulling something out of my ass. So.
Like, I mean, especially FPSs where they're talking about, well, mouse and keyboard is so much better than a gamepad because you have such a fucking more accurate control. It's like, okay. That's great. Save that for the MLG Professional Gaming League.
Or you're
going to
have everybody
consumers.
Cheering you on anyway.
Yeah,
you're probably
exactly.
earning money, so who the fuck cares?
Yeah. So it's like, for the rest of us at home who have no hope of ever doing that thing, even if we wanted to, we don't care. I'd much rather be playing with people on a console while I'm on my PC just because it's the same fucking game. I don't care if they're on a 360. I don't care if they're on an Xbox One. I don't care if they're on a PS4.
Or whatever.
Or whatever the hell it happens to be. I just want to have a good time.
Things along those lines. It's like, these consoles are out there. They provide so many different games. If you can't play it on one, you can probably play it on another if it's not an exclusive. Or at the very least, look it up on PC. Or watch a playthrough. Or whatever the case is. I mean, if you're interested, you have so many avenues. I realize that not everybody has access to the internet, but it's so hard to not find these days. If you want to find some sort of media, even if it's not live streams or recorded gameplays or anything like that, there's so much to read. There's so many different strategies you can look at. I mean, game FAQs has been around for fucking ever. You can still find new content for old-ass games just because people find new ways of playing them. And it's just like, this is fantastic. This is exactly what the developers wanted. They want people to play their games and give them a lasting legacy, and that's exactly what's happening. When you're watching playthroughs, you're getting inspired to play your own playthroughs. When you're reading FAQs, you're seeing how best to play the game or even change it into your own methods and things like that. So, I mean, games are living. I mean, it's almost as prolific as books and movies. I mean, they're all in the same tier, honestly.
As the relatively new medium that they are, yes, Absolutely.
They're cross-platform. There's so many different ways to access them. There's so many ways to research them. I mean, like, think of game FAQs as basically Spark Notes for games. Honestly, that's what they are. I mean, if you want to find a story overview, fine. If you want to find game scripts, fine. If you want to find any means of getting through any side quest or just powering through a game, you're going to find that shit. So if you really want to do that, fine. That's just the way that you do things. But if you want to discover things on your own, disconnect yourself and just play something. And just experience the game for what it is. And like, I just started Ni No Kuni this last Sunday, because I was pissy and I wanted to do something and I wanted to kick myself into doing something. So I just opened a game and I played it. And it was fantastic. And an hour and a half in, sure, it's a classic RPG with plenty of cutscenes and tutorials, but I'm at the point now where it's a game that I can finally immerse myself into. That's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing that it took that long to get that far, because there's just so much to learn. And there's so much interactability that you have to learn what exactly is going on so you can better interact with it. It's just what you need to do. I don't feel the same way about FF13, where it's needless. I still think that, but it's still probably a good game. I'll probably pick it up at some point. It's the six-hour-long hallway simulator so far.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'm told as soon as you get to the first boss battle, it's actually unique and interesting, so I'm going to at least give them credence for that.
It's funny when you say that, because I just think about my experience with FF10, the first 2 hours of cutscenes and shit, and I'm just like,
It gets better. I can personally attest to that.
It gets so much better. I watched this half an hour intro movie, and now there's this 2 minutes of battle, and now I have to listen to them talk for another half hour. I didn't pay $8 to go to a movie theater and watch a movie. What the fuck am I doing here sitting? Is I don't know. No, that's an axe to grind for another time.
I understand, though. And I will say that the FF10 HD remix is not going to be terribly different. However,
I know, because I saw what she played through at PAX.
It's the exact same in the very beginning. However, getting into the island of Besaid and moving onward when you're actually going through those temples and things like that, it turns into a very different gameplay experience. It is worth getting through the initial grind, unfortunately. But now that you know what it is, we don't necessarily need to sit there and read the dialogue. We can just mash X like every other RPG. With the exception of Dragon Fantasy, we love you guys. So, you actually have entertaining dialogue.
Yes, they do have entertaining dialogue, and I have actually sat there and read through it, because I expect them to have entertaining dialogue, because now that's what I know them for. Yeah, I think we're getting to the end of the useful content of tonight.
Yes.
Not to go against your ranting, because it certainly is relevant and useful.
No, I'm perfectly perfectly able to just ramble about this shit, because, I mean, I'm a very different kind of game player than most, so I can share my experiences non-mainstream. So.
And you and I are very different game players to each other, and I am certainly not a mainstream gamer either. So
that's true. I in that same vein, though, I mean, what is a mainstream gamer? I mean, what is normal?
Well, I could probably tell you that. I mean, it's...
Please don't say Call of Duty.
Call of Battlefield Medal Honor 75!
Ghosts.
Ghosts, Call of Duty dog, bro gamer, whatever, all that shit.
So fluffy. Wow.
Exactly. Okay. So I want to thank you all for joining us here tonight for Journey 3 Episode 5. I am Mr. Bond.
And I'm Tormod.
We're going to close with our signature closing track, a remix from Secret of Evermore entitled A Whisper and a Shadow by Darksword. Good night, everybody.
Ciao.